it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. It's time for the match preview with me, Andrew Musgrove, and John Gibson. Newcastle welcome Brighton to St. James's Park this Saturday. Traditional 3 p.m. kickoff for the last home game of what has been an unbelievable campaign. Plenty ups, plenty downs, entertaining nonetheless. We're going to get into who might play against Brighton, what it means for Newcastle's European place next season, because of course there's loads to play for in the race for Europe. But first off, John, I want to talk about a former Newcastle United striker, a Spanish elderman living out his dream at the Bernabeu, Joselu, scoring a double in the Champions League semi-final to not only win the game, but rescue the game for Real Madrid and send them to yet another final. What a story. What a turnaround he's had in his career, John.
Well, yes, it's absolutely incredible, really. It's almost incredible as Chris Wood's hat-trick for Nottingham Forest at St. James's Park. It just shows what a wonderful game we are in football, because it throws up all sorts of unexpected. I mean, when you consider that Harry Kane and Bellingham were on the pitch, you wouldn't have thought the hero would be our former player. And good for him. I mean, let's be realistic about it. He couldn't have missed. And the goalkeeper on the first one must be so embarrassed it's untrue, yet he'd had such a wonderful game, the keeper. But in fairness, to take nothing away from Joselu, because I don't wish to do that, you've got to be Johnny on the spot. If he wasn't there, if he hadn't followed in, he wouldn't have been able to finish. And good for him, it's terrific. But I think there's a lot of people on Tyneside and an awful lot of people around Stoke just checking the record books to make certain it's the same guy as we knew. And I don't think it'll get him into the starting place in the Wembley final by any means. But it's a wonderful story for the lad. And as a nice guy, it's good to see him do that. The two things that dive out your mind straight away is what a difference confidence can make. Which he was devoid of at Newcastle and at Stoke, and what a difference playing with world-class players can make. You know, you can almost say that if you've got anything about you, you can play centre-forward in the Real Madrid side or whatever. Playing centre-forward in a Mike Ashley side is slightly different. But good for him, pleased for him. They're an incredible side, Real, aren't they? They win matches, they've got no right to win. They get dosed and then right at the end, they win. And they're either the luckiest side in the world or they're football royalty, and everybody is scared to death of them and they always find a way to win. You pick whichever answer you want.
Yeah, good sides always find a way to win when they don't deserve it, don't they? But yeah, I think it's probably one of my most favourite football stories ever, to be fair. I mean, 10 goals he scored in the Premier League between Newcastle and Stoke, then went to Alves and scored 36 in 110. Moved to Espanyol, got 16 in his single season with Espanyol, and then got a loan deal to Real Madrid where he scored 9 goals. Well, I didn't realise, John, he actually already played for Real Madrid and he scored in his one and only appearance for Real Madrid. He was prolific in the Real Madrid B side.
I was going to say, he played in the B side, didn't he?
He made one senior appearance for Madrid and got a goal in that game before moving on to Germany. But what a tremendous story. And hopefully he can repeat it in the Champions League final, because I would love to see it.
I mean, it's a terrific story. As I say, it's a startling story, and that's what makes it terrific. When you look at Chris Wood's record, in one game for Nottingham Forest, he scored more goals in, at St James's Park than he did for Newcastle in the Premier League. These absolutely amazing things happen. And, of course, this transfer and what he'd done at Espanyol, I mean, he's won Spanish international caps as well, and he's in his mid-30s. It is quite an unbelievable story. But, you know, he who waits, everything comes to he who waits, and then it's good for the lad and good for him. But I don't want him back. I'll stick with Isak and Callum Wilson, thank you very much.
Yes, and I'm sure Real Madrid wouldn't mind Alexander Isak in the white of the Bernabeu, but he's not going anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get into Newcastle versus Brighton then, John. This Saturday, the last home game of the season. And I feel like we're getting into that kind of territory again with Newcastle United, where you're looking at this game and you are expecting a victory. And it makes me a little uncomfortable because of spending decades of being a Newcastle United fan. I know you've spent a lot longer, John, but it does leave me a little bit uncomfortable because I'm expecting Newcastle United to win. And you know what? I think they might win as well.
Yeah, well, I'm fully expecting them to win, and I don't think they might win. I'm positive that they will win, and I believe that we're going to be in Europe as well. So how about that? And even with two away games to go. And it's deserved, you know. You can't believe this season is in some ways been horrendous, and in other ways has been wonderful. It's been horrendous because of all the injuries. It's been wonderful because of Paris Saint-Germain and 4-1 and all the goals that we've scored this season. And to be in a situation now where we can clinch Europe, and it's in our own hands. If we win 3 games out of 3, we'll clinch Europe, regardless of whether it's from 5th instead of Spurs or whether it's from 6th. We will clinch Europe. And to do that after the length of injuries we've had all season, not just a spurt of them, would be quite phenomenal. But we are getting very close to what was our best. Yes, the last 2 games, 9 goals, but we've only beaten, the cynics could say, Sheffield United, who were put down, and Burnley, who will almost certainly be going with them. But it's better than that. I mean, if the last 7 games, we won 5 and drawn 1 and only lost 1. We've scored 78 goals, which is our best scoring return in the Premier League. And we're getting 4 fives and the odd 8, you know, regularly these days. And, you know, I got worried about last season. A lot was around the defence. The defence was absolutely fabulous, wasn't it? It let in virtually no goals whatsoever. Watertight, wonderful. We got worried about the defence mid-season here because we started leaking. But all of a sudden, you look at what we've got going forward, and you think of this, Andrew. Think of the pace alone here with Isak, Wilson, Gordon, Barnes, Almiron and Murphy. They would terrify that lot, 3 starting and others on the bench, and all will be available as far as we know this Saturday. That lot would terrify any defence. The pace alone would terrify any defence that's in that lot. So we can score goals. If we let a goal in, if we let 2 goals in, we can score 3. And I would expect us to beat Brighton in the form we are in, and them in the form they're in, because they hadn't won in 6 before they beat Aston Villa 1-0 with a very late goal. And why should we get worried and say, oh dear me, they've beaten Aston Villa, and Aston Villa will probably be in the Champions League. We beat Aston Villa home and away, so we shouldn't get worried about the fact that they beat Aston Villa. And yes, they can play some wonderful football. Yes, they've got some decent players. Yes, they've got a decent manager, but they can also get some horrendous results, Andrew. As well as the good ones, they get some awful ones. And they've got nothing to play for, and we've got everything to play for. So if we get really stuck into them early doors and power them with our pace, with our power, and with our desire, then Newcastle win.
Yeah, without a question.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You mentioned there the form of Brighton, and it isn't good. Aston Villa put to bed the six-game winless run for Brighton. I did actually speak to a colleague of mine who covers Aston Villa, and he just said Villa were crap. And the only thing really to watch out for is Adingra from Brighton was a real menace. But other than that, Brighton weren't really anything to write home about. But their form, John, as you mentioned, isn't great. Last six games, they're 16th in the form table. Won just once out of those six games, conceding 11 and scoring just two. If you mark it up to 10 games, the last 10 games, they're 17th, won just two, lost five, conceded 17 and scored just five. So they've fallen away, because it wasn't too long ago, John, that we were talking about Brighton in the discussion about European football.
Sure.
And in that time, Newcastle's form was picked up brilliantly, and Brighton have fallen away. And look, you mentioned De Zerbi and the praise he gets, and he's a wonderful manager. But I have to be honest, I don't get it. I really do not get it. I think he plays some wonderful football at times, but look how inconsistent they are. And I don't know whether maybe the links to Liverpool have maybe impacted him. You know, certain managers, and I'm not saying this is the case for him, but we've seen previously, I remember one Newcastle manager in particular moving to rule himself out of another job when no one had ruled him in. So sometimes when big jobs are going, it, you know, the egos can run a little bit wild. So I don't know if that's had an impact down at Brighton.
I think he's a decent manager. I didn't say he's a wonderful manager. A lot of other people think he's a wonderful manager. He's got a wonderful reputation. I think he's decent. I think he's no more than that. I think he's lucky to be at the club he's in, because Brighton have such a reputation, going from Dan Asher to all the players they've sold for a fortune and replaced with players just as good in theory, and all the managers coming from nowhere, be it Potter, be it this guy, whoever it is, and still doing a decent job. If anybody passes through Brighton, they're automatically on the radar for one of the big clubs, or so it is said. They, as I said in the piece, they get frighteningly bad results as well as good ones. They really do. And they are in a current bad run, not put right by the Aston Villa result, and they have nothing to play for. They have nothing to play for, and we have everything to play for, and we are at home. So, and this is our finale at home. This is our golden goodbye to the fans. Thank you very much for your support over the last 2 years, etc., etc. Sure, we can't afford to make a mess of it. We've got to win and get the 3 points, but I think we'll do. We will. And in the main, sides have fallen over themselves to put Newcastle in Europe. We talked about Brighton. You mentioned Brighton. You know, not so long ago, we were talking about they might be in with a European chance because of the football they were playing, etc., etc. They've fallen away dramatically. West Ham have fallen off the precipice. In Moyes, who was going to discuss whether he was going to accept a new contract at the end of the season or not, has got the push. Manchester United have gone into free fall. Spurs have gone into free fall. Clubs are trying to push Newcastle into Europe, bar one. And the big concern is Chelsea, who, after a season of absolutely not knowing whether they're coming or going, whether they're going up or down or sideways or disappearing, have suddenly struck some sort of form and have got organised by Posh, and they're getting results. They're the biggest challenge to. I know we have got to overhaul Spurs and have a go at Spurs, but they're losing games left, right and centre. Man U are losing games left, right and centre. I mean, this weekend, if we beat Brighton, or should I say when we beat Brighton, and if Manchester United lose against Arsenal, should I say when Manchester United lose against Arsenal, we'll be 5 points ahead of them with only two games remaining. So there'll be only 6 points on the table and we are 5 points ahead. If we draw at Manchester United, they finish beneath us. If the results go according to plan, and that's how much they've blown up and Spurs have blown up. So there's a real opportunity for us. We found a second wind when we were worrying whether we could, and it was a genuine worry because there was things about us, especially our away form, and we're coming to two away games, there was things about us that produced a worry. But we've steadied the ship. People are coming back. We're starting to play sides. I mean, Manchester United are going to have a lot to play for, but Brighton don't, and Brentford don't, and we do. And that should count for a lot at this stage of the season. It usually does.
Yeah, and hopefully the pressure of what's there to achieve doesn't get the better of Newcastle, but I'm sure it won't do. Brighton, John, away from home in the last six, picked up just 5 points, whereas Newcastle at home, 14 points from the last six, scoring 19. So, you know, this on paper is a foregone conclusion, of course, but it's the Premier League, and as you always say, always got a chance in a two-horse race. And anyhow, will not be taking nothing for granted. He'll be expecting a tough game from Brighton. They have some decent players, as you mentioned. I suppose the standout one is João Pedro. Newcastle were very interested in him. Couldn't quite work the price tag out. He's looked actually an absolute steal. I think he cost Brighton in the end 30 million and he's got 20 goals this season. If Newcastle revisited him this summer, I wouldn't be against that at all. I think he's a real bright spark, a real talented player. And he's probably the one, John, that Newcastle are going to have to try and keep quiet on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. But as I've said before, when we've talked on this, let them worry about us, not us worry about them. We needn't worry about Pedro while keeping an eye on him, and Eddie Howe's very, very good at that. Let them worry about Isaac, Wilson and Gordon. And then let them look at the bench and worry about Barnes and Almiron, and Murphy could well start with the first three I mentioned, as he did in the last game. They will frighten people on pace alone. And at the moment, Isaac is on fire. The number of goals he scored, he's the best Newcastle scorer in terms of return since Shearer. And you know what I've found interesting and good in reassuring Andrew is that Callum Wilson has come back and he's scored two goals in one game plus a third of a game. That's all he had when he come on as sub. So in one and a third games, he scored two goals. He has come out this week and said that he believes he can get in the Euros. Now, I'm delighted that he thinks that. I think it will take some doing with his fitness record. Can you rely on him, etc., etc.? Ollie Watkins is up there to get in. Maybe if they take two extra strikers to back up Kane instead of one, he'll get in ahead of Tony because of goals. But will he? Nonetheless, the point I'm trying to make is he says he can get in to the Euros. Eddie Howe has said repeatedly what a positive person he is and how he sets targets and gets to them. There's been a huge Callum PR thing going on his behalf this week. He got a huge segment on Sky Sports in which this is why he should be a late entry to go to the Euros. And who was leading the chance? Jermaine Defoe, who's got 57 England caps, so he knows about playing centre-forward. He didn't just play for Sunderland, he also played for Spurs. But he knew Callum when he was on loan at Bournemouth. And he's leading the chance. Now, what's lovely for me, bringing it down to us, because that's all I care about, is Newcastle United is more than England. What I like is if Callum Wilson believes he can get into Euros, he's got to score in the three remaining games he's got to make Southgate say, wow, he's back to what he can, and he's got to play well and score. And he's hit the ground running in the one of the third games he's had. So go on, my son. Chase your Europe dream. You know why? Because while you're doing that, you'll put us in Europe. And because it take more than Callum, but he will add something. He's give us an extra dimension, his availability in the last game and a half. I'm still of the opinion that he doesn't play enough to warrant being the only centre forward we have with Isak for next season. No way. We can't risk that again because we know he'll be injured again. But if Callum Wilson makes it to the Euros with England, he's got to have hit the jackpot in these three games that are left. And if he does that with Isak and with Gordon and with everybody else, we make Europe as well.
Well, he tends to perform when Gareth Southgate is in the stands. So I'm hoping the Newcastle United owners have put in a bit of hospitality and Gareth appears in the Millburn stand on Saturday, because, like I say, he seems to be the motivation for Wilson to find the goals. And as you mentioned there, look, he started against Burnley on Saturday. It was a bit of a surprise, John, from myself to see both Isak and Wilson start. Anyhow, clearly felt Burnley were there to be got at, and he wanted to, you know, to get ahead as soon as possible and make sure he's got his two most clinical goal scorers on the pitch, and it worked perfectly. I guess the key question is, will that be the same front three? Or, I mean, it was 4-4-2, so will it be Isak and Wilson up top in a two again against Brighton, do you think?
Why not? The last time he experimented with his side, which was the back, wasn't it? Remember when he played three centre halves, he then did it the next game, and it worked a treat against Spurs, I think, and he did it the next game and it didn't work. It down at Palace. So he could do it again, it wouldn't work again. But if you work on the basis that you're going to let Gordon go wide on one side and Murphy go wide on the other, who I thought was brilliant at Burnley, by the way, and you play Isak in a 10 roll off Wilson, because you think Burnley can be taken in the working, we're playing at home against a side with nothing to play for, and we need 3 points. It's exactly the same situation as Burnley, isn't it? Let's go for it. Let's put our big guns on. I'll tell you what, and the biggest surety for me, Andrew, is that you won't drop Isak. Of course, he's got 23 goals all in, everything. You don't drop Isak. And he won't drop Wilson. A, he loves Wilson, and B, he scored twice in the last two games. So they're a shoo-in. Them two are a shoo-in.
Interesting, isn't it? Because I remember last season, the game against Brighton, Newcastle had to get 3 points to kind of cement their place. Ended up winning 4-1 at St. James's Park the day Burn got on the score sheet. Wilson and Bruno got goals in the final couple of minutes of the game. There was an own goal to start the scoring off. But they won 4-1. That meant Newcastle in the game after needed to win, and they would have secured Champions League football, so this game was really important. Of course, it was at this time of the year again. My point being is that I remember sitting there thinking, this is an absolute tactical masterclass. It was one of those games where you just went, wow, Eddie Howe has got this down to a T. Everything was spot on, and he's really done his homework. And Brighton, who were, I think, were in great form themselves. They were sixth at the time, John. I think they were one of the informed teams in the Premier League, which is blown away by Newcastle. That day, he played 4-3-3. Isak out on the flank, Wilson in the middle, and Almirón on the right. And I just wonder whether maybe, because not too much has really changed at Brighton. You know, they play the same way. Most of the same personnel are there, same manager, obviously. I just wonder whether maybe he might revert back to a 4-3-3 just to try and nullify any threat that Brighton have. You know, they pass it really sharp. They are a good side. But do you think that he will stick with 4-4-2, or could you see him adapting for the team in front of him?
He shouldn't adapt to the team in front of him, because the team in front of him is not the team he faced last season. They're nothing like in the same form. Regardless of personnel, regardless of the manager, they're in no form whatsoever. And therefore, do not give them too much respect. Give them the respect of not underestimating. Give them the respect of going about it thoroughly. Give them the respect of having the right attitude. But don't give them the respect of any sort of caution. And I would want my two big hitters, my two natural goal scorers, Isak and Wilson, on the park, and as central as it's possible to be without them nicking each other's space, which is the way they played at Burnley, rather than playing Isak at outside left and Wilson through the middle. If you do that, who do you leave out? You certainly don't leave out Gordon, because Gordon's been the sensation of the season. And I think Murphy had as good a game as he's had for Newcastle in the last game. So do you leave him out, who he loves as well, by the way? The manager loves Murphy, and Murphy was outstanding. And I know it's got nothing to do with me, as we always say, we're trying to second-guess Eddie Howe. Well, I'm not trying to second-guess Eddie Howe. Let Eddie do what he thinks he ought to do. I would go with the format, not the same 11, but the format that he used down at Burnley and play Isaac off Wilson's shoulder and play Murphy one side and Gordon the other side.
I think he might go 4-3-3, and I think Wilson might drop to the bench. Isaac in the middle, Murphy on the right, Gordon on the left.
You think he'll drop Wilson after his two goals in a game and a half, and he says, I'm going to play for England this summer?
Yeah, I do. I think he'll use him on the bench and bring him off, and I think he'll probably get a goal either way on Saturday, but I do think we might see Wilson on the bench. But let's go, John, on your pick of 4-4-2, and let's go through the team. We saw Nick Pope back on the bench against Burnley, so he's nearing a return. Does he come in against Brighton, or does Martin Dubravka remain between the sticks?
Well, again, it depends whether you're asking Eddie or whether you're asking me. If you're asking me, I'll bring Pope back. Because if he's good enough to be on the bench, and I know you don't use goalkeepers tactically during a game or once in a blue moon, but if he's good enough to be on the bench, presumably his shoulder's in and he's diving about in training, because you wouldn't run the risk of it popping out again. He's diving about in training Monday to Friday. That being so, I would bring Pope back. I think Dubrovka's a lovely lad. I think he's a very competent number two. I think what he's done for us in the past has been magnificent, but Pope's a better goalkeeper without a shadow of doubt. So I would bring Pope back. I'm not certain whether Eddie will or not, because I don't see what Eddie sees during the week. But I know who Eddie thinks is his number one goalkeeper. It's whether he's ready now. But if he's not ready now, is he going to be ready at Manchester United? If he's not ready at Manchester United, is he going to be ready at Brentford? It's not the sort of situation where an outfield player you can bring on for the last 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, and then the following game start him. You've got to start him from nowhere. And he's either ready or he isn't. And if he was ready enough for the bench, you've got to think he's very, very close to be ready. I would play Pope for Dubravka, and I would play, and I'm emphasising the I because I'm not saying it's going to happen, and I would play Joe Linton for Longstaff.
Interesting, because that was going to be the other key selection point that I was going to ask you about. I think Joe Linton will definitely start against Manchester United, without question. It's just whether he starts against Brighton. And I'm not too sure. I think Sean getting that goal, absolutely crucial for him. He needed that. You could see the relief on his face. And it's a little bit like your argument about Callum Wilson, or he's finding the back of the net. He's confident. He's making all these claims about England. Obviously, Sean's not doing that. Sean's going to be nowhere near the England squad. But I just think with Sean getting that goal and given the stick that he's had over recent weeks, I don't think Eddie will take him out of the side. I think he'll keep him in the side. And I think he'll actually probably play. Let me just get up the, because obviously we're looking on a 4-4-2. So yeah, I think if it's going 4-4-2, I think it'll be the same four across the midfield: Murphy, Longstaff, Bruno, and Gordon. I can't see Longstaff dropping out.
But having said that, and by the way, Joe Linton's twice the player, and Longstaff's form, forget his goal, Longstaff's form's been abysmal. We were talking last week about him needing a rest. This week he's starting because he scored a goal. And he's starting ahead if a bloke were called the beast who we've just talked about for weeks is the man Newcastle have missed the most. And we've ended up with a conclusion that the two players Newcastle have missed the most in a horrendous season of missing so many have been Pope and Joe Linton. That we've missed the most if the players, and these are available now. Wait a minute. But we also say, well, we think he'll go with what he's he normally goes with, you know, the loyal guy, the manager and all that, etc., etc. Absolutely true, and it is a great trait of the manager. But we won 5-1 against Sheffield United. In the very next game at Burnley, did you see him dropping Anderson and starting Wilson? Because I don't think anybody else did. And that's what he did after a 5-1 win. So he can change a winning side, which we always say that he doesn't like to do. But that was voluntary. He dropped Anderson and started Wilson. That surprised everybody. And I bet it surprised you. It certainly surprised me.
No, it did surprise me. I think if he goes 4-3-3, then I could see Joe Linton coming into the midfield three. But again, I don't think it'll be at the expense of Sean Longstaff. And I get what you're saying. We've banged on for weeks about Sean needing a rest, and Joe Linton coming back could be the best thing ever for Sean. But we know Eddie Howe absolutely loves him to bits. I don't see him resting him at all on Saturday. I think Sean Longstaff is guaranteed to start one way or the other. I think, like I say, if it's three across the middle, then Joe Linton comes in alongside Bruno and Longstaff. If it's 4-4-2, I think it'll be Longstaff and Gomes. I'm not sure Joe Linton's comfortable playing as a two. I think he's much better as a midfield central three. We'll look at the defence now, John, against Burnley, Livermento, Kraft, Burn, Hall. I mean, absolute makeshift back four. But we have to talk about this centre pairing, because Kraft and Burn, they look very good together. And Kraft is coming for a lot of stick. Why have they given him a new contract, etc., etc.? But he just continues to impress, goes about his business without any fanfare, just gets on with it. He's a very good defender, and those two look solid at the back.
Yeah, they've done a job for us, and I'm very appreciative of that. And I think Kraft, it sounds ironic because he's a Swedish international right-back, but I think he's more centre-half is better for him, because he hasn't got to get up and down and be ultra-creative on the ball, going forward and showing pace, which is not his forte. He can defend in the natural way, and he is a good defender. And the two of them together have been absolutely terrific. But you don't want them to be with two centre-halves next season when we're trying to get back in the Champions League, do you?
No, that goes without saying, but I do think there'll be the two that start against
Brighton. Oh, possibly. Who else is it to start at the centre of the defence?
Well, there was a lot of talk about bringing Alex Murphy on, starting Alex Murphy against Brighton, but against Burnley, sorry. But you could just tell by the way Eddie Howe was talking about Emile Kraft in the build-up to the game. I mean, I would have stuck my mortgage on Kraft starting, and I'll do it again.
Kraft's got the lack of experience Murphy's got for chucking him into a game. Can you imagine chucking a young lad who will love into a starting lineup at home on the last day of this, if their home programme, and they need 3 points for Europe, and somehow we got turned over? No, you'll go for with your experience. The one thing I would say, because the back four picks itself, apart from if Trippier was suddenly available, which he's got to be at some time in the three games this week, and it probably won't be this one. It'll probably be one of the two away games. But I wouldn't drop Livramenko.
No, not at all. I mean, against Brighton, it'll be Livramento and Lewis Hall, who have been really, really good. I love watching Tino Livramento, John, the way he picks the ball up. And he doesn't just go down the flank. He goes across the park. He's all over the place. And he's got such good control with it. He's a really good dribbler. And he was involved in one of the goals against Burnley. When Trippier's back fit, he's going to be wanting to do the same as Wilson. He knows he needs to play to have a real chance of getting into the England squad. I think he's probably in anyway, as long as he's fit. But whether he starts is another question for England. So he knows those minutes are going to be crucial. But Eddie has to pick the players that are best for Newcastle United in this moment, not doing anyone any favours, not doing Trippier a favour because he wants to get in the England squad. And if Eddie Howe does what's best for Newcastle, Livramento will be right back for the remainder of the season without a shadow of a doubt in my mind.
Oh, there's no question about that. And by the way, Trippier won't start for England because Kyle Walker will. But he needs to get in the squad. I think, like you, he will get in the squad as long as he's fit. But I mean, Trippier is the future of Newcastle. He looks wonderful. He looks a Rolls Royce.
Just going to say that. I think you said... I'm sure he would love to be 21 again and have the best years ahead
Livermento of him. Is 21. He's a Rolls Royce. He can play off either feet. You see Livermento play left back. He doesn't look like a right back playing on his wrong side. He looks as comfortable on that side as because it normally if you play a fullback on his wrong side, what he tends to do is narrow the pitch by coming inside to get it on his correct foot to play the ball because he's worried about his left foot if he's a right back. Here, this fella doesn't narrow the play. He keeps it wide. He can go straight down the tram line on the left side because he's confident playing off both feet. And he is a Rolls Royce of a player. He's a future England international. I'm talking about full England. He's played at all the age groups. But he's a future England. The problem next season, and we're not going to discuss it now, I presume, because we've got three games in a week that'll tell us our destiny. But the problem next season is who starts right back, Trippier or Livermento, because I don't think you can leave Tino out the team next season from being a regular. He's earned the ability to be a regular in this side. And if you've got two quality players, and both can play right back, both can play left back, but there's only two positions open to them, and there's Hall, etc., etc. So that's going to be interesting, but that's for another day. But Tino is good enough to be a first-team regular at Newcastle.
Well, I do like to remind people about the prediction I made very early on in the season after having seen Livermento play a couple of times. And I went on record and said, the beginning of next season, so the season that begins in August coming, Tino Livermento will be first choice right back. Aaron Stokes, he laughed us out of the room. I had a bit of stick on social media as well, John, but I stick by it. Livermento will be Newcastle's number one right back, I think, at the beginning of next season. He's that good. He's just absolutely amazing. And I think he's stronger at right back. And given the way he's finishing the season, and he'll have a good pre-season, no doubt. You know, he'll come back even fitter and stronger. You can't not start him in his best position for me. As you say, he's the future, but actually what he is he's the present because he's that good. And on the left-hand side, John, Lewis Hall, we spoke about him last week, but another really, really good performance against Brighton. I mean, we can go back and forth about how it took so long, but without a shadow of a doubt, he starts against Brighton, doesn't he?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course he does. I think the back four picks itself for Brighton. The back four picks itself and the front picks itself in terms of personnel. It's a matter of whether you do something with Pope and Joe Linton or whether you leave them where they were last week, which is on the bench. I think Almiron, who we've not mentioned, will start on the bench. I don't think there's any way you can bring in Almiron ahead of Murphy or Gordon the way they played in the last game. But all of a sudden you look at the bench and the people that are going to be on there, whether it's Barnes and whether it's Almiron and whether it's Joe Linton and Pope or whatever, it is an Anderson. It is suddenly looking healthy again. And that's terrific because it's looked like a kindergarten at times this season. And it's terrific to have a healthy bench with us again. So I'm optimistic going into what is a ginormous week for us because it's three games in a week. And it's a ginormous week for us. But I'm feeling good about it.
Yeah, me too. I mean, just talk to us a bit more about the positivity about having options on the bench, because as you mentioned, the bench against Burnley was looking so strong for the first time in quite a while. Joe Linton, Barnes, Pope, Almiron, Anderson, all there. How important is that Eddie Howe's now got options to use?
Oh, massive. Massive. Because we were going into matches mid-season, Andrew, and we were saying, well, we had about nine out. And we were saying, well, the starting 11 still doesn't look bad. That's a decent starting 11. But a lot of the players were just coming back. They couldn't last 90 minutes. They weren't up to sharpness for the time that they were on the pitch. And you looked at the bench and it was two goalkeepers and four academy players. And they, you know, and you thought, we can't change it. The bench. And then you looked round at the other team's bench and went, oh dear, And because we couldn't change it. We can change it now, you know, and that is a huge asset, because as many as 9 people on the bench, yeah, I remember the old days when football was about the 11 on the field. And then you got one sub on the bench in the 70s when you went to cup finals. You had 11 on the field in a sub, and that was it. 9 subs now. It's no longer a 12-man team or a 12-man squad. And the bench is enormous, and the bench is looking healthier than it's looked in an awful long time. And it's no coincidence that form is picking up around the same time as injuries in the bench is picking up. And that augurs well for the 3 games that are to come. Now, I'm not underestimating them. All 3 games are on a knife edge. Brighton are capable in a 2-horse race, though I don't expect them to. The other 2 matches are away, so Newcastle's form has still not been wonderful away. Manchester United are in absolute disarray and are hopelessly inept. But on any one day, if they get players back like Fernandes or whoever, in any one day, they could just hit it on that day, and especially at Old Trafford, not away, and produce a problem. And Brentford, you could say, can be freed up for their last home game, because they're safe, they're in no trouble, and they can go and they can knock it about. You can make a case for all 3 games being tough, and they are. But the form we are in, looking at us and looking at our forward power, you've got to believe, and looking at what's happened to Man U and what's happened to Spurs and what's happened to West Ham and Brighton in going for the European places, there's only us and Chelsea in any sort of reign of form. Us and Chelsea are the 2 form sides going for Europe. So, you know, you've got to give us a great chance. And we've got 2-point lead over Man U and Chelsea. We've got to make that count, as well as looking up and saying, can we still catch Spurs? And we can. To do that, Spurs will continue on the form they're on, because they've got a 4-point cushion and we're running out of time. But if they keep losing like they have been, of course we can do it. But we've got a 2-point lead also over Chelsea and Man U, and we must make that count. And the first thing you've got to do is win it home against Brighton.
And the goal difference as well is absolutely key.
Goal difference is an extra point, isn't it?
Yeah. Newcastle plus 22, Chelsea plus 11, and Manchester United minus 3. But we said it, John, didn't we? We said it back in February, March, that when Eddie Howe gets the players back from injury, because at that time you could pretty much name a starting 11 of injuries. We said that when he gets the players back, that they will finish the season strongly, and they are proving us right. But it's not like it was a wild and out there kind of prediction. It was just common sense, I think, because when you get your best players back, you've got options to change games. But then when you have players competing for places, the players are already in the starting 11 there. Performances rise, and it all just rolls into this one real positive ball that you just push down a hill and see where it ends up. And hopefully it's going to be 5th place. If not, we'll take 6th. But
I mean, if we hadn't had all these injuries, and I mean, you know, Pope out for 5 months and Joe Linton for 4 months and Botman disappearing, and really has been injured all season, because when he was on the side, he was struggling, and then he went completely. Willock, everybody's been out for a huge amount of time. If we hadn't had those type of injuries, yes, you always have some injuries. We all accept that, but not the sort of injuries we've had. If we hadn't had injuries, we could have made the Champions League again this season.
I agree 100%. We've had the injuries, so we just have to concentrate on what we've got. And I mean, 5th place would be unbelievable. Bit of a long shot. 6th place is still a fantastic achievement. Is it easier, John, you think, for Eddie Howe that 6th place is in Newcastle's hands when he's preparing for these games, these final 3 games, when he's preparing for Brighton? He's not chasing someone down. Look, you look at Spurs, they are gettable. But he's not. He doesn't need to chase them down. Do you know what I mean? Kind of thing, because one's expecting that. He'll just be concentrating on consolidating 6th place. And given that they're in the favourable position that they are, 2 points ahead, goal difference ahead of Chelsea, Manchester United, there's no real pressure on them, I don't think. And it's in their hands. It's in their control. Do you think that makes it easier for Eddie Howe and the players?
it motivates that much more. Because when you get down, Andrew, to as close to the finish line as this, three games off, you know, if you've got six or seven or eight games, well, anything can happen. But when you get as close as this, you do not want to be chasing. You want to be in charge. Because the simple thing is that Manchester United, as we're talking at this moment, Manchester United and Chelsea can do anything they like, but if we win our last three... Now, if you're Chelsea, you're having to rely on Newcastle, unless you get in on Newcastle's coattails, you've got to rely on Newcastle to slip up. You don't want to, as close to the finish as this, have to rely on anybody but yourself. It is crystal clear to Eddie what we've got to do, which is if we win these three games, we're in Europe. And if that takes us, by the way, where we go above Spurs, that's fine. But we don't have to concentrate on Spurs, because that'll take care of itself. We just look after our own business, make certain we hold off Chelsea and Man U, and as good as Chelsea have been recently in terms of results, they can't overhaul us unless we drop points. They cannot overhaul us unless we drop points. So it's simple. We win our last home game, then we go into two games in 4 days away from home. Huge one with Man U, because they're one of the teams on our coattails. But we know the way they are in Brentford on the last day. If it comes down to Brentford on the last day and we need anything to get into Europe, and they don't, who would you put your money on, even if you were neutral?
Yeah, good point. Just in a sentence, John, can Newcastle get fifth ahead of Spurs, do you think?
Yes, they can. Will they? I'm not saying they will. They can. Yes, they can. But that, you see, that's, I've just been arguing the point about Chelsea and Manchester United. But that depends on Spurs. That doesn't depend on us. That depends on Spurs. I like what we are in charge of, and we are in charge of sixth. We can stop Manchester United and Chelsea, and we can be guaranteed sixth, and that'll be a fabulous season. To get fifth, and we can overhaul them, but Spurs have got to drop points, because if they don't, we can't do it. And but the way they're playing, they're as flaky as Manchester United. Spurs, they've really imploded. So we can get fifth, but we can definitely be sixth.
It's funny, isn't it? And I wonder if this is having some sort of kind of effect, maybe mentally. Newcastle getting sixth, given everything that they've been through this season, is a massive achievement. You know, some might say it's a miracle. It's not an achievement to be sniffed at all. Manchester United finishing sixth, there will be some disappointment within the camp. You know, they wanted or expected to be closer to the title than they did sixth place. Chelsea, probably a little bit closer to Newcastle in the mindset of, you know, we've had a pretty poor season, but given the money they've spent, sixth place, I mean, it's also a bit of an embarrassment for them, really. Spurs want a Champions League football, talk about being title challengers 3 months into the season. So everyone around them is having this kind of sense of disappointment. Yes, we're still fighting for things, but even if we get it, it's kind of like, we should have been doing a little bit better. Whereas with Newcastle, I do think, was top four really the expectation again this season? I'm not too sure it was. I think getting European football was probably the expectation, and they're on path to do that, and they're on path to do it despite everything that's gone on. And I do wonder if that plays into kind of the mindset with this race for Europe. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the big six, they call themselves the big six. We don't call them the big six. They call themselves the big six. And isn't it amazing? Did they ever do their mathematics? All the big six expect to be in the top four. Well, that's impossible, because they expect to be in the Champions League. And therefore, there's mass disappointment. I mean, Spurs think they're in the big six. Manchester United think they're in the big six. Chelsea think they're in the big six. And we want to be in the big six. Although we see ourselves as a big club, we want to scatter them. And we scattered them last season. We finished ahead of Liverpool and Chelsea. This season, we can finish ahead of Chelsea and Manchester United. maybe Spurs. But we're scattering them, and they won't like that. Hard lines, like, I mean, that's not going to produce any crocodile tears here. But yes, we are going for an end of the season that will make us proud, make the supporters proud, give everybody within the club a lift, encourage players to come and join Newcastle United. But where Manchester United are going to finish, where Chelsea are going to finish, where Spurs are going to finish, their supporters are going to be disappointed. The club's going to be disappointed. The manager might get the sack at Man U, or will get the sack at Man U as a consequence. So it's going to be a downer for them, but it can be an upper for us. And that is the big difference. And I think that is a significant difference during the run-in as well, because we have something that puts us on the up and up. The other three, when the dust settles, the other three will be privately disappointed wherever they finish, because Spurs probably won't make the Champions League. Fifth will be their best. And after being top when Big Hands first come at the start of the season, there'll be disappointment there. There's certainly disappointment with Chelsea, and there's massive disappointment at Man U.
And I guess it all rolls into next season as well. Newcastle will go into next season in a real positive step if they get Europe, whereas Ten Hag stays on, John. You know, they'll just be going round and round in this chaotic nature that they do. Ange will be under pressure because he hasn't qualified for the Champions League, and Chelsea will probably try and splash in another £1 billion, and Poch will be under pressure as well. So it's a massive benefit for Newcastle chasing something that they actually want, whereas the other three look at it as a disappointment. So it all leads up to next season as well, and just relieving a bit of pressure on Eddie Howe if there was any, whereas the other three I think will be under huge pressure from the moment the first game kicks off. Just before I get your result prediction, John, player of the season nominations have been announced by the Premier League, and we have a man in the running. Do you want to have a guess who it is?
Anthony Gordon.
See, I would have said that. It's not Anthony Gordon. It's Alexander Isak.
Because they're going on goals, aren't they?
Yes. So the other ones, Phil Foden, Erling Haaland, Martin Odegaard, Cole Palmer, Declan Rice, Ollie Watkins, and somehow, if someone at the Premier League can explain this to me, I'm more than willing to listen. Virgil van Dijk. Can someone explain to me how he's picked up that nomination? What on earth? But anyway, the other six he's up against, Alexander Isak, I think all you know, good nominees, deserving nominees. Who's your player of the season from that list, John?
Well, it's dominated by forwards, isn't it? Which is why Alexander's in it. And I think I've been bang on about Isak since he arrived. I mean, and so is everybody else. I mean, I'm not trying to blow my trumpet, because it's obvious to anybody what a good player he is, and what a quality finisher he is, etc., etc. And the amount of goals he scored, we haven't had that from Alan Shearer. So I think he is absolutely sensational. But I've got to say that I don't actually think, despite his goals, that he's the Newcastle player of the season. And my vote, if I was given one, would go to Anthony Gordon, who come from being a disaster at the end of last season to playing every game this season, bar when he's been suspended a couple. In an injury-laden season, and he's got in the double figures for goals, which he didn't do in the whole of his career at Everton, the whole of his career put together, and his assists are as good. And I think he just nicks it from Isak as the Newcastle player of the season. I mean, I haven't paid that much attention to the list you've talked to me, but the one that would leap out at me would be Phil Foden, who I think's got everything. And is a young man, and has got everything. I mean, Haaland, we know he's a beast. We know he's this, that, and the other. But I think Foden's extra, extra special.
16 goals for Phil Foden this season, 8 assists. So Gordon not too far behind him. You know, I'm going to go for Declan Rice. I think he's been the difference for Arsenal. I know Arsenal probably won't win the title because City have found their form as we expect them to, but I do think the reason Arsenal are pushing City so close to the wire is Declan Rice. He is the difference, and he's been tremendous. He's added a couple of goals to his game as well. I think he's a really, really talented player. Newcastle could certainly do with someone like him in the middle to help complement Bruno Guimarães. But for me, I'm going to go with Declan Rice. I don't think Rice will win it. I think it'll probably either be Haaland or Foden, I think, because, you know, City, isn't it? But yeah, interesting list there. Ollie Watkins deservedly in it as well. He's had a tremendous season. But anyway, John, down to business, down to business.
Yeah.
Well, actually, before I do that, I just want to ask you, with it being the last home game of the season, chance to send the fans off into the summer happy, you expecting a good atmosphere?
I'm expecting a terrific atmosphere. I'm expecting everybody to be 6 inches taller than they normally are because of the form Newcastle have run into at the end, because we can see light at the end of the tunnel, because we're scoring a pile of goals. We've always loved goals, haven't we? Newcastle United is built on being entertainers. That's what we love. We love to be entertained. We've scored 78 goals this season in the Premier League itself. And there's still, what, 3 games to go? I mean, we're scoring goals by the bucket load, and that's wonderful. And by the way, I'd like to mention something which I did do in the Chronicle. May I say as well that me, as an old historian that adores Newcastle and adores their tradition and adores their history, this is the 100th birthday of Jackie Milburn on Saturday. Come on, come on. Half the players, their families are sitting in the Milburn stand. That's how good he is. How many other players have got a stand at St. James's Park named after them? The answer, by the way, is none. And there's a statue outside. He scored 201 goals for Newcastle United. Only Shearer scored more. And by the way, he scored them when Newcastle only played in 2 competitions, the league and the FA Cup. There was no League Cup and there was no Europe. So that's how good Jackie is. It's Jackie's birthday. I adore Jackie. I love Jackie. Jackie was my hero as a kid. He was my dear friend when he was an adult. I worked with him so much. It's his 100th year birthday on Saturday. We play Brighton. Come on, Callum. Come on, Alex. If that doesn't... this guy opened the door for you guys to walk through the great number nines. Go out there. Do the business for yourselves. Do the business for your families who are sitting in the Milburn stand, and do the business for Geordies. Get the job done and send everybody home happy, because once again, after having a dodgy time mid-season when we only drew at home to Luton and Bournemouth and lost to Nottingham Forest, our home record once again is top-notch. If we get into Europe, it's because of our home record, which is top-notch. Let's finish off with a round of applause. When you walk round the ground at the end, which you do on every match to thank the fans, this will be a thank you for the whole season. Make it count. And don't forget, when you turn round and you come back towards the tunnel to look up and think, that's the Milburn stand. We did you proud today, son, didn't we?
There we go. Victory for Newcastle United then on Saturday. And that would be a major boost towards European qualification for next season. John, thank you as always for providing the match preview to you guys watching. Hit subscribe. Give the video a thumbs up to you guys listening on the audio channel. Please leave us a rating and review. And here's to 3 points for Newcastle United. Head over to chroniclelive.co.uk for all the latest Newcastle United news, including Eddie Howe's press conference on Friday morning and live coverage of this game through a dedicated Match Day live blog on Saturday afternoon. For myself and John, we'll catch you guys next week.